Committee to order. We've got Senate File 2372 on the agenda. This is the Insurance Fraud Prevention Act. I just want to thank Senator Jensen and Kosalka and all the members that worked so hard on this issue, and the folks in the audience here that have attended. I don't know. I'm guessing we had 6 to 10 meetings, and it was very well attended. I'd say 40 to, 60, 80 people a meeting. This whole fraud thing, I've learned a lot about it. The biggest thing is probably that it costs every homeowner at least $1,000 extra on their homeowner's policy just because of the issue of fraud. So with the work of these, this committee that met all summer, we've got to, I'm guessing, probably about the 30-yard line. We're not at the 100-yard line yet, but this is, I believe, is a good start to get at the fraud issue in Minnesota. So I particularly, again, want to thank Senator Jensen and Kosalka for taking the time, and many of the members showed up at these sessions for about, 6 months or so. So with that, Senator Jensen, you may proceed with your testimony on Senate File 2372. Senator Jensen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, today we're going to have a conversation. We're going to have a conversation about insurance fraud, what it is, what it isn't, what should we do about it, and most importantly, what does it mean to Minnesota consumers? I was hoping to have a PowerPoint that I did prepare, but unfortunately, technical difficulties have presented themselves, so we'll go ahead without it. You should have before you a fraud report.
This
yes.
document we all should have.
I'll give you a second to
fraud
find that.
Fraud working group report.
I'd first like to thank you, Chair Senator Metzen, for putting the working group together, and your understanding that this isn't just about trying to find the bad guys. It's making sure that what our language has, it prevents it, and it certainly doesn't attract it, and what that means to consumers. So I'd also like to thank my staff for doing whatever they could to make sure that this is a successful endeavor. I want to thank everyone who worked on the working group, and like Senator Metzen referred to, there were over 70 people that participated in the working group. There were also legislators, and I'd like to thank them as well. And you can see their names listed on page 3 of the report. Senator Paul Gazelka, as co-chair, thank you for your work on this. Senator Jim Metzen, Senator Gary Dames, Senator Kerry Dietzick, Senator Barb Goodwin, Senator Susan Kent, Senator Warren Limmer, Senator Eric Pratt, Representative Raymond Dean, Representative Halverson.
Not all the members, I'm just say, aren't on this committee either, so that, I thought that was good that other members from other jurisdictions would show up at your meeting.
And absolutely.
That was very good. And let me just emphasize one more time that it's very bipartisan members who attended all of these meetings. And that's why I made the working group co-chair by a Democrat and a Republican. These fraud issues are not Republican issues alone or DFL issues. They're people's issues. So, and then, okay, now, Senator.
If you turn to page 1 of the report, I'd like to do the overview. And I guess I just want to read through it so that the members of the public and the people in the room have an opportunity, and the ones that have not seen the report before. Fraud involves using deception to dishonestly make a personal gain for oneself and or create a loss for another. Fraud drains our resources, affects public services, and perhaps of more concern, may fund other criminal activity. Fraud is a major and growing threat to public safety and prosperity in Minnesota. With that in mind, on May 14, 2013, Senator Metzen, Chair of the Senate Commerce Committee, appointed Senator Jensen and Senator Gazelka as co-chairs of a working group on insurance fraud issues facing Minnesota citizens. The working group was to report back to the Commerce Committee with recommendations for the 2014 session. This document fulfills that request. Legislators were recruited by the working group co-chairs from the Senate and House Commerce, Public Safety, and Judiciary Committees. Industry and consumer stakeholders were solicited through open invitation. 11 legislators and over 70 industry professionals, law enforcement officials, consumer groups and associations, health provider professionals, government organizations, and individuals participated. At the first meeting held on June 18th, members were asked to put together their top three fraud issues and possible solutions. A matrix was developed from submitted issues, and a regular meeting schedule was established. The group met the third Thursday of each month, starting in September of 2013. The submissions were then divided into topics, and early discussions revolved around the suggestions that the group sent in to us. Although the range of submission was broad, including workers' comp, life, property insurance, the working group narrowed the scope of the conversation. Most of the conversations were focused on suggestions in the no-fault insurance system. No-fault auto insurance was enacted in the 1970s to help control the rapid growth of bodily injury-related claims and legal costs that often drive auto insurance premium increases. Solutions targeted needed changes to help reduce and deter fraudulent activity. There were no conversations by the group to repeal the no-fault system. We heard testimony that many of the issues taking place in the current no-fault insurance system are not technically fraudulent or illegal actions under current regulations, but are certainly abuses. They require reforms to provide equal rights and protections to everyone, most importantly, the consumer. Need for reform in this area is not new to the legislature, but attempts to reform have not been successful. This working group did not review current proposed legislation, but asked members to identify solutions we can come to agreement on and develop legislative solutions for the 2014 session. We acknowledge there are remaining issues that need to be addressed. Our final recommendation honors the incredible work done by the members of the working group. The participating legislators feel strongly there has been positive, motivated energy created by good people coming together with open minds, rolling up their sleeves and putting in the time and effort it takes to find solutions to real problems. The establishment of a standing subcommittee would continue the work already started by the current working group. The fight against fraud needs to be taken up by all of us. We need to do more of what we know works well, like sharing information to prevent fraud, and we need to find new approaches to new threats, such as those posed by the increased use and dependence on technology. But most importantly, we need to do this together.
Mr. Chair, while she pauses, can I make
Senator
Gazelka. And Senator Jensen, I didn't talk about this either, but In case you were going to do it, I don't mean to preempt you, but there's a letter in our packet from the Coalition Against Insurance Fraud endorsing the work that we've done here. You know, and you've got everything from insurance companies to Citizen Advocacy Center, Consumer Action, Consumer Alliance, Consumer Federation of America. So it's a broad group of people that recognize that this is a real problem, and the solutions that we have come together and found are real solutions that they can support. So I wanted to say that as we go into this.
That's a very good point, good. Senator. Senator Jensen, you want to proceed?
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair.
You got listed there the 2, 4, 6, 8 full working group meeting. Oh, it's on your...
I do have my PowerPoint now,
okay,
so we
good.
Can
thank you.
See what it is. But I wanted to point out and let you know these were the meetings that we held, and there was one that was also held out another area in Brainerd, and thanks for hosting that, Senator Gazelka. It was a good meeting. The most important thing that happened within the working group, I want you to take a look at the page that has the matrix. As suggestions came in and solutions came in, we took a look at all of them and divided them into different categories: judiciary, regulatory, medical. And we learned right away that we would need some legislators that participate in those jurisdictions to help us, because fraud reaches across our jurisdictional things that we do within our own committees. So we invited some from public safety and from judiciary, just because we wanted that involvement and we wanted to make sure that what we were doing could actually transfer into meaningful legislation. This is the areas that we looked at in no-fault auto. We looked at no-fault auto in particular because there is legislation that has been proposed in the past that has passed at different levels in different houses. So we know and recognized that there were issues that needed to be looked at when it comes to fraud in the no-fault auto area. What this chart shows is that there were meetings and which meetings discussed those particular issues. And if we felt at the end when we agreed on the working report that this work should continue and that there should be some things that we need to look at in future sessions. Other things we looked at were life issues and then things in general like uniformity and licensing, information exchange, how do we talk to each other about the investigations and the things that we're doing trying to deal with fraud. We also looked at civil penalties and things other that we were interested in, too, as do we need to do something with our uninsured motorists and proof of insurance. So we'll get right to the recommendations. The first recommendation was the right of appeal. Now, this provision provides, when it was created, it provided a unique way, a different way, for medical appeals to take place, but it actually is duplicating what we currently do within the no-fault arbitration statutes. So the committee felt that that should be repealed. Recommendation two, prescription drug regulation. We're finding in other states and in Minnesota as well an increasing amount of transfer of drugs from repackaging them and putting them into different packaging and then marking the price up to 1,000%. So the committee, the working group looked at this and felt that the impact was very great when it came to no-fault claims, and we recommended that we limit the reimbursement of to the wholesale price. Recommendation three, penalties for fraud. One of the things that other states, we learned through the group that other states are having some success when it comes to imposing other penalties for fraud. So we recommended that the state adopt regulation to allow deauthorization of providers found to be guilty of fraudulent activities from being able to receive payment for the fraudulent medical services. Recommendation four. Consolidated arbitration claims. There have been recent court decisions that actually have expanded the arbitration that we allow to vendors and medical providers. So what's been happening is that claims have been consolidated and actually consolidated into the hundreds of thousands of dollars above the statutory limit of $10,000. And so the working group recommends that we limit the ability of those consolidations of claims in the no-fault arbitration section of law, but still maintaining the ability for the vendor to utilize the district court system as they currently do today. Recommendation five, accident data privacy. There's a Minnesota law that allows the release of accident information to third parties. And in fact, we sell it, that. The state sells that information. And we recommended, after looking at that issue, that a restriction on that, the accident reporting disclosure to the general public be limited, and that the type of data that can be released to someone else be also limited. Recommendation six, personal injury protection levels. The current levels have not been raised for a very long time, and so the working group recommends that the disability and income loss benefits raise from $250 to $500 per week, and that the funeral benefits raise from $2,000 to $5,000. We also recommend that the survivor economic loss benefit be increased from $200 to $500 per week.
Annette, excuse me, it's been a while since those numbers have been raised. Is that correct?
Since the 70s, I believe.
Oh, is that right? Yeah, I know it went back quite a ways.
So it goes back quite a ways. In fact, most of the no-fault section has not been modified or changed since its inception.
1974 or so.
That's correct.
Okay.
Recommendation 7, increase information exchange. We took a look at some of the technology that we now have available to us and the ability to analyze that information and got a better understanding that in order for this to work well and in a cost-effective way, we should be able to communicate with each other. And part of the problem is immunity stipulations that create people to, you know, not be able to actually go and make that claim or turn in something that they're thinking should be an issue. So there are nearly 30 states that have really strong information sharing protection laws, and the working group recommended that we take a look at that and make clear that we're going to support anyone that's willing to come forward with information that will try to help prevent fraud. Recommendation 8, civil penalties by departments. With sometimes what happens and what we learned in the working group is that that fraud claims are very expensive and they're very time-consuming and they're very difficult to prosecute. So there has to be a very strong case, and we spend a lot of time investigating without the ability to actually prosecute the case. So with that in mind, the working group recommended that the Commerce Department be authorized to bring a civil penalty not exceeding $25,000 for each act of insurance fraud and order restitution to an insurer or self-insured employer of any insurance proceeds paid relating to a fraudulent insurance claim. Recommendation 9, uninsured motorist proof of insurance. The working group recommended that we establish a formal task force to take a look at some solutions in the verification of insurance that we face in Minnesota today. Recommendation 10, batch billing. Under the current system, there really isn't anything to stop a medical service claim from sending large claims in at one time. It's a complicated process, and the reimbursement and payment becomes more difficult. So the working group recommends that we streamline that approach by establishing a defined timeline for the submission of claims by providers. Recommendation 11, future of working group. Over the amount of time that we spent looking at all of the issues that were submitted, there were so many that we didn't get to. And many that we talked about and couldn't come to a consensus on or find any real solution for. So this recommendation ensures that the work of the working group that had started would continue with the standing subcommittee. I believe that this recommendation is vital if we are actually going to curb the attempts of people coming into Minnesota trying to fraudulently and dishonestly take money from consumers and cost consumers a lot of money through increased premiums and other things. The idea of this subcommittee is that we would set up some subgroups, and this was a recommendation by several of the members of the working group, where we could work in smaller groups, 70 people in one room, trying to decide all these issues, although it worked very well to find things we can find collaboration on. It's very difficult to take on very complex and hard issues to try to come to a resolution on. So what the subcommittee is suggesting that we would break out into subgroups, and those subgroups would take a look at additional things. For instance, this is a possibility. We could take a deeper look into arbitration and no-fault arbitration. We could take a look at workers' compensation. That's not what we looked at over this interim, but something that we could do. We could look at property claims when it comes to fraud and some consumer protection items that go along with that. I want you to look at Appendix C. Appendix C lists all of the documents that we received during the working group's time together. Instead of providing that to the committee, we decided that we would number them with a reference number. So if there's anything in here that someone would like to take a look at and read and have more information on and see what the working group actually studied and went over, that would be made available to you. You would just have to contact my office, and we would be able to provide that information to you. With that,
should I talk about that? Oh, should I mention that?
Yeah,
the last
intentional.
The last page in your handout is.
It's on the state. It's not her.
We're selling ad space.
Yeah, we're invited to a Greater Mankato Day at the state capitol.
Perfect.
On the 18th.
And I.
When does it start?
5 to 7 at the Kelly Inn in St. Paul on Tuesday, March 18th.
Oh, shoot.
But of course, Duluth Day, Mr. Chairman, is tonight.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's right.
Positive,
so. Duluth, though, you should add your announcement in her
5 to 8 p.m.
report also. Okay, how do you want to proceed? I think you have an amendment. We want to look at that now.
Thank
and
you,
then
Mr.
get the
Chair.
Bill in the shape you'd like. And then
thank you, Mr.
On.
Chair. The hard work of the working group actually did look at some actual language and legislation to be proposed during the session, and that's what you have in front of you, Senate File 2372.
You do that too.
And as all things that involve a lot of people, the last thing we said in the working group is that we would continue to work on the language, and if anyone in the group had something that they wanted to talk about or change, we would be willing to take a look at that and make sure that it gets into the language when we present it to the Commerce Committee. So I have an amendment that is the work of everyone that looked at the original and had some recommendations for changes, and that is the A2 amendment. I would like to present it.
That's the A2 with, amendment.
Yes, with... except for lines 3.13 through 3.25.
Okay, this, if we need discussion, we'll do that a little later. We generally take these amendments with the author's recommendation, and then we go from there.
Thank you. Okay.
So we take it as an author's amendment, though?
Yeah, we do that. Senator Kasalka moves the amendment. All those in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed.
Before the vote,
Senator Latz.
It was not clear to me whether Senator Jensen was, for the moment, not including lines 3.13 to 3.25 in her author's amendment, or she was simply reserving discussion or presentation for that point until later.
I'm removing lines.
She's removing 3. It.
That's correct.
Thank you. And everyone in favor.
Senator Dames, or Senator Brown, excuse me.
Yes, I need that repeated. We're removing Section 11 of the amendment?
That's correct.
Yes.
Senator Dahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, Senator Jensen, then, I know that some groups have come to me with some concerns about any amendments. And what you're removing a more controversial piece of this author's amendment, or
sure,
can you assure to me that what we are approving is not controversial? Which I would need more information.
All things are controversial. Mr. Chair and Senator Dahl, Section 11 was one of the recommendations, includes the arbitration changes to the consolidated payments through the no-fault arbitration system. That was a recommendation that was made by the working group. But it is not included in this language, in my amendment.
Senator Kasalka.
Well, you know, this is just Thank you, Mr. Chair. More for the audience, when we do an author's amendment, you know, we realize there's some folks here that are nervous about this, but the typical author's amendment, we defer to the author and accept, and then we debate it, and if it's not what we want, then we take it out. And I just thought the audience should know that that's very common procedure, is author's amendment is just accepted.
To begin with, yeah, that's okay. Senator Jensen moves the amendment.
All those sorry.
All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, motion carries. Okay, we've got, I think we're at the point, Senator, for witnesses, is that correct?
I could walk through the bill real quickly.
Oh, I thought we kind of, okay, yeah.
Yep, I just did the task force, the recommendations from the working group. Now we're going to take a look at the legislation that came out of that work. Section 1, now I'm going to be referring to it with the amendment. So stop me if you have questions on where we're at. Section 1 is a technical change conforming with the repeal in Section 13. Section 2 is for accident report changes preventing the ability to sell information within 90 days. The original recommendation was to eliminate the ability of the Department of Public Safety to be able to sell accident information, and what we've done is changed that to say they have to wait till 90 days after the accident before that is sold. Section 3, administrative penalties, allows the Commissioner of Commerce to impose an administrative penalty for insurance fraud. This will allow for more weight to penalties, and the concept was received by the working group. The language as we have it now would be that the provider would have to be charged with a criminal offense, and then the department could oppose civil penalties from that point. Section 4 allows the appropriate licensing boards to deauthorize providers from receiving compensation from insurers or victims under the No Fault Act. It allows the Commissioner of Commerce to conduct investigations, send a list of suspect providers to an appropriate licensing board for possible deauthorization. It requires the licensing board to report back to the Department of Commerce, and then that the Department of Commerce would post those deauthorized providers on their website. Section 5, immunity from liability. This section grants insurance support organizations immunity for release of information in good faith relevant to insurance fraud investigation to an authorized person. And this ensures that information can move around from person to person, and we can cooperate when we do those investigations. It also removes hurdles from standing in the way of progress towards stopping fraud. Section 6. The repackaging of narcotic drugs, it limits the marketing on drugs dispensed from a licensed pharmacy. This makes sure that the victims aren't selling these at outrageous prices and taking up all of the $2,000 in your no-fault benefit that you have, and it's common sense. Section 7, billing, requires a provider to bill the insurance company within 90 days of service to get reimbursement under no fault. And it will help to operate smoothly and efficiently and provide less room for mistakes and things getting lost and that type of thing. Section 8, disability benefits. This is where we raise the disability benefits from $250 to $500. And Section 9 is where we raise the funeral benefits from $2,000 to $500. And Section 10 is the economic loss increase from $200 to $500. Section 11 is not included in the amendment. Section 12, what I'd like to do at this point is have Senator Kent, is she available? Is she in here? Is she? Yes. If she could come forward. Senator Kent was a member of the working group and worked very hard to try to figure out Section 12 on setting up a task force on insured motors, and I'd like her to talk about it to you a little bit.
I welcome, Senator, to the Commerce Committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm pleased to be here. This, I think, is my first time in front of the Commerce Committee, so this is a special occasion.
For the donuts.
It just dawned on me when I was sitting back there. Sorry. I'm not presenting a bill yet, so.
Same check will work.
Still time.
I wanted to thank the committee for hearing this portion. I started working with the working group during the interim because of my role with as vice chair of the Transportation and Public Safety Committee and the issues of public safety involved in here. And as Senator Jensen mentioned, recommendation number 9 is the establishment of a formal task force to examine solutions to the verification issues. The question of uninsured motorists kept coming up. I want to thank Senator Gazelka for his partnership in addressing some of this. I know this is something that we both had some real interest in. What we saw was that due to a converging of several factors, there is agreement that this is the right approach at this time. If you go sort of through the background, currently automotive insurance is mandatory. But due to a variety of factor over time, more than 10 years, we've scaled back some of our enforcement mechanisms in Minnesota, and to the point now that drivers are required to demonstrate proof of insurance in really relatively few circumstances. So as a result of that situation, we actually have little information about how many motorists are uninsured. There are a wide range of estimates from like 10 to 20% of drivers. We don't really know what that represents in terms of costs to motorists and consumers. And so that got everybody thinking. We need to really understand what the scope of this problem is and be very dispassionate about it and do a real cost-benefit analysis and say, what is the scope of the problem? How much is this costing us? And then look at potential solutions. That brings up another one of the factors that makes this a good time. In terms of technology around the country, a number of states are bringing in new mechanisms for this. There are new technological advances that make it more feasible to verify insurance on a regular basis. So this seemed a good time to sort of scope that out, see what the resources are now and get an updated look at it. And sorry, there was one other thing I was going to mention really quickly, and then it escaped me. But and the other piece of it is recognizing, again, in the cost part of it, we need to look at what these solutions are, be very dispassionate about it, and just make a sort of a straight economic, how is it going to benefit consumers if we do this. And I just looked over and saw Pat McCormick, the head of Driver and Vehicle Services, and remembered my other point, which is that there is a big reconfiguring and contract right now for the Minlars, the IT project and system within Driver and Vehicle Services. And so it would be really expensive if we tried to just change everything overnight and implement something. So this seemed to be a good time to factor that into the equation as well. And so we recommended a task force that would basically go out and analyze this, look at all the different resources that are available, have a good representative group to consider all these issues and bring forth information and perspective from all the different stakeholder groups.
Thank you very much for that explanation, Senator Jensen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Senator Latz.
Mr. Chairman, to that point, from 1990 to 1995, I represented the Department of Public Safety in the Attorney General's office, and I talked with them at that time about trying to find some way to do electronic verification of insurance information that was submitted at the counters, at the public service counters, when people were registering their vehicles and renewing their driving privileges and that whole bit. And I got the same response then was, it'd be awfully expensive to change the computer systems over. I can't imagine what the expense would be now.
And it was 1995?
Yeah, somewhere in the early 90s.
Yeah.
And I suggested at that time, well, maybe the insurance industry would be interested in subventing the cost because it could increase their customer base substantially if there were a lot of people not getting insurance. And it never went any further, I don't think, than those conversations. And so Nothing's changed. Maybe this is a year to get it changed.
That's what Senator Kent is.
Well, and Mr. Chair and Senator Latz, you may have seen, you were prescient, what was that, you know, 15 years ago or something. There's now a commercial with a pig at a driver's services counter showing his proof of insurance on his phone. So you imagine that before Geico did. There is a big overhaul, and it's a multi-year phase-in for MnLARS right now, and we ran across this in some legislation in the last session for the Department of Public Safety. And so this is a good time to see if we can't integrate some of these changes while they're implementing additional changes at the same time. And we have technology and evolutions around the country, too, that can hopefully make it make sense.
But Senator Jensen.
Mr. Chair, and this is a great example of how bringing in some legislators from other departments really helped us be able to move something forward that within the Commerce Committee ourselves we probably wouldn't be able to do. So at this point, I think I'm ready to let some people testify.
Very good. We have Joel Carlson first. I think John Choi, the Ramsey County Attorney, is kind of in a has another meeting
with
Mr. Carlson. I wonder if he'd mind if Mr. Choi goes first. Or there's no okay, Mr. Choi, if Joel.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, it's a pleasure to be here with you again talking about this subject. I first of all want to really thank you, Mr. Chair, for having the vision to create the subcommittee process and really focus the work of this committee around this important topic about insurance fraud. And I also want to commend the two co-chairs of the subcommittee, Senator Gazelka and Senator Jensen, for their hard work in the interim and taking into account some of the wishes and expressions of ideas that prosecutors and law enforcement had around this issue. As you know, Mr. Chairman, financial fraud is a high priority of mine as the chief prosecutor in Ramsey County, and certainly one of those is the area of insurance fraud. And I think you heard testimony from members of my staff talking about this renewed effort to try to focus around this crime, but how complex these crimes can be. And we talked a little bit about the need for resources for investigation and for prosecution. I know that it did not make it into the bill this year, but at some point I hope that this committee will continue to try to figure out ways to enhance that, because whatever we can do for the Department of Commerce for investigation and for local law enforcement, that would be a positive thing. I also want to say that I am supportive of not only the process of how you got to this bill today, but there are provisions in here that I think that will be very helpful for the public, because the less cases that we see, the better it is. And you guys are taking efforts to reform the system in which these things happen. And I'm very excited about some of the provisions related to the information exchange, and also the provisions relative to looking at administrative and civil penalties, because not everything is going to be able to be prosecuted because of our high burden of proof. And so there are ways, I think, to look at this from a civil perspective, and you're doing that in that bill. So with that, Mr. Chairman, I just wanted to say that I'm very supportive of the process that you've undertaken and the work of this committee. Thank you very much.
County Attorney Choi, you've been, or your folks have been at, I think, just about every meeting, so we appreciate your efforts in this area. And so thank you very much for your input.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Now, Mr. Carlson. And Joel, I think, Mr. Carlson, you've been at, I think, attended each and every meeting, too.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and members. Joel Carlson on behalf of the Minnesota Association for Justice, and I appreciate Senator Jensen retelling for me how I spent my summer vacation. We did spend a lot of time on this. I got a couple areas on the bill that I want to address that I hope we can have some additional work on as the bill moves forward, and then I'll let others testify to the bill on parts that they may have concerns with. But Mr. Chairman and members, on the I had mentioned when we had first rolled out the bill in February about the process for the administrative penalty orders that are in the bill. And I know that they made a couple of changes that I saw on the amendment, but we have a little distance to go there. The amendment does make these proceedings now subject to Chapter 14, the Administrative Procedures Act, it really kind of lacks a framework for how the department would undertake this, and it imposes a significant $25,000 civil penalty. And so I think they're going to want to get that process right. Generally administrative penalty orders are forgivable. The commissioner has the ability to issue a corrective order before there's a penalty. Those are kind of lacking in this content here, and I know that that's maybe more for judiciary, but that area is just not quite there yet. And just for the committee members, the Department of Health has long had APO authority under Chapter 144, as does the Department of Public Safety under 299A, and those are pretty decent frameworks of how they do it, but the one thing that I'm worried about is that they generally deal with people who are licensed or under the supervision of that authority. Whether they hold a permit, whether they hold a license, there's no real definition here of who would actually be subject to the department's new penalty authority, and I think we should maybe work to close the loop there. Who does this really apply to? Is it a licensed professional? Is it a guy who, drives his car into a tree and gets a higher claim? Or is it a consumer who can complain about an insurance company who is not appropriately paying their claims when they're due? So we really haven't defined how this process would work, and I just point that out because it is substantial penalty authority that we should look at. And then the change, as you know, I had heartburn on the old Section 11 of the bill as it related to accident reports, and I think an attempt to try and address that was in the A2 amendment. I just want you to know that barring any access to the public for accident data for 90 days after the document was created is going to raise all kinds of concerns in the data practices area. The media couldn't get it. You couldn't get your own based on this reading. I know that's probably not their intent, but that's how you would have to read this language. So 90 days from the date they create an accident report is the only time you could get access to it, and I think that to try and fix it, I appreciate the effort to try and fix it, I think it goes just a little too far now and denies that access to everybody. So, Mr. Chairman and members, on this or other parts of the bill, I'm happy to answer questions, and we did spend a lot of time to get to this work product, and happy to answer questions that you might have about it.
Senator Kosoka.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Carlson, I think you're saying, though, that we're close, that we've been working and are continuing to work, and we'll come to some sort of conclusion because you've been a big help in this part of it, and so I appreciate your input, and I feel like we'll get there. Would you say that's true,
Mr. Chairman? I'm not, and members, absolutely think that there are important provisions in this bill that need to move forward. I was trying to confine my comments to the ones that you're not going to hear about from others, where there may be some concerns, and not have a love in on everything on that might be in the bill. So,
thank you very much. We're always willing to keep working on it, but this is a very, very important bill, and it's.
Thinking about the love in part, but
yeah, we need to love this to
Mr. Chair.
As much as we can. Senator Jensen.
Mr. Chair, and I, as author of the bill, have been spending a lot of time since the working group trying to get some concerns addressed, and would be very happy if there are things that we need to do in this before it goes to judiciary. I would like to see some language so that I can get that in shape before. And if those are two things, without changing the intent, if we just need to clarify and make sure that we have the things in the language to protect, and we will do that.
And
I think that's good. Mr. Carlson, you bring up a couple of good points here, and I think they're workable, and we can, the authors or the co-chairs or of the working group are ready to help you or try to fix it up, okay?
And Mr. Chairman, the members of the working group have been open and accessible and have sought out information from all of us, and it's been very much appreciated. It's been a good experience, as I've testified to before.
Thank you very much, and you've got the promise that next on my list is Emily Johnson Piper, Chief of Staff, Department of Commerce. Can welcome to the committee.
Thank you. I'm Emily Johnson Piper. I'm Deputy Commissioner and Chief of Staff for the Department of Commerce. I just have a few remarks. We met extensively with Senator Jensen to discuss a few areas of the agency's concern with the legislation. I think that the concerns were primarily addressed in the A2 amendment. But first, I just would like to say thank you for the time and the effort that the Insurance Fraud Task Force did through the interim. I know our staff participated in those meetings. And so we firmly believe that the spirit and intent of this legislation is something that is a necessity going forward in the state of Minnesota. So thank you. One thing that I just would like to point out is that the way that the amendment is currently written would contemplate, with respect to civil penalties, that a criminal conviction has taken place. And so I think that when we are looking at this from the Commerce Department's perspective, we then would be evaluating whether or not someone who has been criminally convicted, perhaps been subject to an order for restitution and criminal penalties, the Department of Commerce then would utilize resources to take an additional civil action against that person in addition to all of the criminal penalties and restitution associated with the criminal case. And so although the penalties are, you know, significant, $25,000 per action, there would be a question as to practically how that process would follow through, given the person has already been criminally convicted. One other note I think that's important is, and Senator Jensen and we discussed this yesterday, and I think it's reflected in the amendment, the Department of Commerce doesn't maintain provider-related data just in general, right? So that any deauthorization that's given, notice that's given to the Department of Commerce will be new data that we don't receive currently. And so we discussed, so we're going to get this now, what is the expectation of the Department of Commerce to do something with the information that we're receiving with respect to deauthorization of providers? And we understand now that the amendment reflects that we would post it on the Department of Commerce website. We still have some questions about how would that data be housed? How would logistically we receive it? Would we have a database that we would create to house that information? And just procedurally, how we would move forward with doing something with that information. You know, additionally, our Commerce civil investigators, they investigate approximately 40 cases a year. And so when we're looking at workload and things like that, how this impacts our current workload and what the reflection in the scope of what we're doing would anticipate. So the Commerce Fraud Bureau, which is our criminal unit, receives well over 1,000, actually over 1,400 cases a year. We understand that the initial bill was to address sort of those cases on the edge where we have spent all of our resources investigating these cases, and then we bring them to criminal prosecutor's office, and they don't take the case. We still have some recourse, and we're not sure that the bill as written gets at that angle. And then finally, I would just like to say that with respect to the billing provision under 65 B.44, the amendment subdivision 2A, the provision that medical expenses shall not be compensable. We need to be clear at the Commerce Department as to intent that that means not only are if a provider doesn't bill timely to an insurance company, the insurance company can't be liable for that bill, but that the consumer can't be liable for that bill. So, and it's not just the patient, it's the guarantor. So if you're a parent and you're the guarantor of your child's account, we want to make sure that you can't be billed because your provider didn't bill the insurance company in time. So with that, again, we support the intent of this bill, and we've been working closely with Senator Jensen, and we look forward to continuing working closely to work out these issues. And if anyone has any questions for the Department of Commerce, I'm happy to answer.
Thank you, Senator Kosoka, first.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To Commerce side, you know, there's half of the auto theft prevention doesn't go to you guys. If you can help lobby that so that comes your way, that might solve some of the problems.
Thank you.
I think that account was one of many that helped us balance the budget, but Senator Kosoka and I are advocates of trying to get that money where the 50-cent fee, I think, was intended for something, and that's where it should go. Senator Lance.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I wonder if the Deputy Commissioner could reiterate for me the concern relating to conviction or the inability to proceed when prosecution is declined.
Sure. So in the bill as written, with the amendment, it contemplates that the commissioner may proceed in addition to the penalties imposed under 609.611. And you can only have penalties imposed that presupposes that that person has been convicted of a crime and therefore has been assessed penalties. So the commissioner can only move forward. My reading of the bill as written is the commissioner would only be able to move forward when those penalties have been imposed, when a conviction has been entered.
Mr. Chair.
Sir Lance.
So that's because of language in the A2 amendment?
It's because of language in the bill itself. It says, in addition to any criminal penalties that may be imposed under Section 609.11.
So show me where you are.
Line 1.23.
Okay.
So penalties being able to be imposed under 609.611 presupposes that there's been a conviction under 609.611.
Right. So,
Counselor, wait just a second. Did you have a minute? Senator Lance.
Mr. Chairman, I think Senator Lance is aware that the amendment removed some language in the original bill that it just required a preponderance of the evidence and not a conviction or even a clear and convincing standard. So when you engross that, it does require, as the testifier suggests, a criminal conviction and penalties imposed for that before the commissioner could proceed on an administrative basis.
Right. And so, Mr. Chairman, what I'm trying to clarify is that the department would prefer not to have seen that amendment. They'd like to be able to proceed based on a preponderance of the evidence or some other lower standard with administrative sanctions, even if there's no criminal case brought or successfully prosecuted. Is that my understanding?
Well, I think it expands the role of the Commerce Department significantly, but I think that it gets at the intent of the original recommendation of the task force, which is to deal with these provider situations on the cusp where we refer people for criminal charges. It would be an expansion of the jurisdiction of the Commerce Department to take that action civilly against a provider.
Okay. So, Mr. Chairman,
Senator Lance,
what would the Commerce Department prefer?
The Commerce Department would prefer to maintain the language that provided the ability for if it is the will of the body to have the Commerce Department permitted to impose a $25,000 civil penalty, we would prefer to take on that responsibility without the prerequisite of a conviction criminally.
Okay. In other words, you would prefer not to have amended the language.
Correct.
That, as was done with the A2 amendment.
Right.
All right.
I mean, that being said, it does expand what the Commerce Department, what our expectation of our civil investigators' work would be at the Department of Commerce.
What expands it?
The fact that we would be taking civil actions against providers. We just currently do not do that.
Okay. So either way, sorry, Mr. Chair, either way, it's an expansion of the Commerce Department's role and responsibility. You'd prefer to have it expanded even further than is now contemplated by the bill, because you don't want to have a conviction required for you to be able to go after a bad actor. You'd like to be able to act without relying on the criminal prosecution one way or the other, right?
It would be a more effective use of state resources not to be required to wait until a criminal conviction to take a civil action relating to a person.
Okay, maybe this is a question for counsel. If the bill as amended now, would it preclude the Commerce Department from taking civil action unless and until there's a criminal conviction?
Mr. Chairman, not with respect to people they currently regulate and license, but I think it contemplates being able to do that with people Commerce doesn't currently regulate and license, like providers or insured people. I think that without this, they couldn't proceed against them in any case, but with respect to people they regulate and license, they could. Under separate authority.
Okay. But for Section 2, they'll be getting new enforcement authority over a new group of people. And so if we were to be consistent with the way in which the Commerce Department regulates the existing group of licensees, they would be able to take regulatory action against this new group of people also without waiting for criminal process. Correct?
I'm not sure I follow that exactly.
If we want to give the department the same authority over this new group of people that they have over the existing group of people, then we should have left the bill as it was drafted. Correct?
I think that's right. The other piece of it, I believe the $25,000 penalty is higher than what they can currently assess under existing authority. So this is kind of a super penalty, if you will. I think $10,000 is the limit, if I'm not mistaken, for violations under existing law for people they regulate. So in that sense, it's a difference.
So then my follow-up question, Mr. Chairman, is why the distinction? Why are the people under – we're covered by Section 45.0135 being subjected to a different – standard of regulatory oversight than the people the Department of Commerce currently regulates?
Mr. Chair, Senator Latz.
Valid reason. I'm just trying to understand what it is.
Senator Latz, the intent of this and putting it there is to make sure that people that come to Minnesota and want to fraudulently act in this way, we give some authority to somebody that can also put out there a fine civilly. My preference as a legislator would be what happens in Minnesota is we investigate, we get the information, they have a case, and sometimes they send it to the prosecutors and they don't prosecute. So what happens to that work, that time, that money that's put into trying to make sure that we're getting convictions for people that are doing this crime when the system isn't set up currently to be able to do that, not without more resources? That's something that the working group looked at, too, and not something we're going to be able to do in this session. But what we can do in this session is make sure that we have something there that gives someone the authority to also go and impose a civil penalty rather than just criminal. So, but we have to make sure that there's a balance, that we're not opening it up so preponderance of evidence, as I understand it, is a lot different than the criminal. So there needed to be a balance on how we make this go through but still allow the Department of Commerce to impose those civil penalties if they so choose to do that based on how we have it in legislation.
Okay. So, Mr. Chairman, so it sounds like the chief author would prefer not to have added the language in the A2 amendment that she offered, would have preferred the more expanded authority of the Department of Commerce. So, I mean, if the issue is what's the burden of being able to proceed with administrative penalties, you know, that's one discussion. But, I mean, did the new group covered under Chapter 45, you know, say, hey, we don't want to be subject to anything unless there's a conviction? Or was there something else going on? Why this language in the amendment, other than the issue of the burden of proof itself? Because we could make that clear and convincing. And
Senator Kisaka, if you don't mind, wants to weigh in.
As long as I can. Thank you, Mr. Chair. We're trying to find a delicate balance of a number of groups, trial attorneys, insurance companies, insurance agents, chiropractors, and this is kind of the agreement that we can all go forward with. So in some of these sections, one group wanted more and we went a little less. This was one of those that we modified back a little bit. And we probably will have some testimony from, I'm hoping, from that group coming forward. But that's the reason why. We're trying to pick the low-hanging fruit this year and work at it deeper next year.
Okay. Well, maybe I'll wait to hear what testimony comes up, Mr. Chairman, but I may return to the topic.
Yep.
That's fine. That's why we're here.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chief of Staff. Bob Johnson? Is that Bob Dominic Spazzetto? Well, you're kind of taking charge here, there, Dominic, which is all right. That's all right.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's your pleasure. I'd like to go first, and Mr. Johnson will follow up.
I figured that out now. That's you. You shot up
Mr.
there.
Mr. Chairman.
Yeah, welcome to the committee again.
Thank you, Mr.
Chairman. Your participation also in the workshop meetings.
My name's Dominic Spazzetto. I'm here representing the Minnesota Independent Insurance Agents Association. And, Mr. Chairman, it's a pleasure to be before the Commerce Committee once again. And I look forward to working with you the rest of the session, which is about 2 weeks. The independent insurance agents represent 720-some insurance agencies around the state, which have about 3,000 insurance professionals. We're here in support of the work of the work group on insurance fraud, and we commend Senator Jensen, Senator Gazelka for the fine work they've done and for the chairman for setting this up in the first place. And we're encouraged that we're making a small step. We are the front line in this debate because we're the agents who bring the quotes and the policies to the individual insureds, your constituents. And we often hear concerns about the cost of insurance, automobile insurance, and homeowners insurance especially. As the chairman indicated, over $1,000 per person can be attributed to fraud in insurance, and it would be a wonderful thing to do to whittle away at that so that it would maintain people's premiums at their current level or maybe even lower them. So we're very supportive of what you're doing as best you can. The National Insurance Crime Bureau has indicated that Minnesota has the highest rate of questionable claims in the last few years, and even suggest that organized crime may be involved. And I hope I don't go out to the parking lot and find my door welded shut, but I think this is an issue that we have to consider. It's not just a mistake on a claim form. It's not just one particular provider or person trying to game the system. It's organized, and it's contemplated, and it's sophisticated. And it's going to take a lot of organization and sophistication to fight back. So with that, I would just commend the chair for the work of the work group and the work group members and encourage the committee to support this legislation. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Spazzetto. Mr. Bob Johnson, please. Welcome. And I, too, again, would like to thank Mr. Johnson from the Insurance Federation of Minnesota for your attendance at every meeting and your participation. So thank you very much.
Mr. Chairman and committee members, Bob Johnson, Insurance Federation of Minnesota. And again, I will similarly, Mr. Chairman, commend you and Senator Jensen and Senator Gazelka What's gone on this past year in Minnesota is an extraordinary effort, and I can tell all the committee members that from the insurance industry's perspective, and I deal with, you know, companies nationwide and other industry groups, that the effort in Minnesota is unique, and it's really not duplicated right now in many other states. And I think Minnesota is to be commended for the time spent so far, the report produced. But as part of that process, Mr. Chairman, and as you have all identified, a matrix of significant issues in various systems, no fault, property insurance, health insurance. So the point is that there is a lot to do. And the reason we need to do it is that this isn't a crime against insurance companies. We pay the bills, and then we tell your constituents what it costs. And you've heard the numbers, and those are estimates. They could be higher. Surely it's between $1,000 and $1,500 a year per family impact of the cost, goods and services, premiums of insurance fraud. So do we need to act on it? Yes. Do we need to start doing things as quickly as we can? Yes. Are other states acting on this? Yes. Is this a Democratic or a Republican issue? No. And so Senator Jensen pointed out some, and I know there's not time right now, but if you can look at some of the materials, if you can look at some of the submissions, and I know there are witnesses that couldn't be here today, Mr. Chairman, that you and many of the committee members have met. You know, the Senator Gazelka mentioned the Coalition Against Insurance Fraud. Mr. Howard Goldblatt came and testified. I really urge you, if you get a chance, to pull up that letter and look at the board composition of the Coalition Against Insurance Fraud, who's endorsing this bill and all the future efforts to focus on it. There's as many national consumer groups, the National Urban League. There is a wide variety of groups in society, public, private, that have come together for the sole purpose of agreeing on changes to support around the country on fighting insurance fraud because it's a consumer issue. So that group is endorsing the bill, and they have talked specifics in their letter about the deauthorization. Where did that come from? And to the work group's credit, other states have taken actions in recent years, and if they've accomplished some good results, we should look at it. The deauthorization, just so the committee members know, that's a proposal that comes right from Governor Cuomo of New York. And the work group saw a press release that he recently issued, literally in the governor's press release, describing provider fraud in the no-fault New York system, and then listing the names of the providers that were being deauthorized in New York. Well, why? Because fraud in no-fault medical is a serious, exploding issue in Minnesota and around the country, and particularly in no-fault states. The administrative penalty section that we've talked about here, was that a new creation? That comes from the state of Maryland, who recently passed a law to combat insurance fraud to give their Commerce Department civil fining authority. So the point is that a lot of states are putting tools in the toolbox, if you will, from a public policy perspective, prosecutors, law enforcement. There were sheriffs and police chiefs that were at some of the initial meetings. Mr. Chairman, you know of this work group. So, again, the point is that it's a very broad-based and needed effort. No fault got some particular scrutiny, and I think it deserved that scrutiny. And I think what ended up, there are disappointments. So we totally support the bill. We totally support the process. It needs to go forward. We're committed to it, and we are working with. Mr. Choi's office, he spent considerable time, and his prosecutors have come, and we've had training sessions with prosecutors, the Attorney General's office, our industry has, in the last year, just on insurance fraud, just on working in a collaborative way. How can we be smarter together to collaborate, look at the bad folks, the fraudsters are coming to this state. I think if you, if you get a chance to look at the letter from Mr. Tim Lynch of the National Insurance Crime Bureau, and I know, Mr. Chairman, you know he testified both at this committee in the 2013 session. He testified at the work group's hearing. And when you look at the statistics, and they have comprehensive national statistics, and when you look at the tremendous growth in the medical fraud and no faults, the top category of growth in this state and around the country, and then you look at the statistics that NICB has identified, and they call it a reverse migration of organized crime from the East Coast to Minnesota. And they are not coming here for the Vikings or the Guthrie, or they are coming here because of our no-fault law. That's why they're coming here. That's corroboration of that, you can get that from the head of the Minneapolis or the Minnesota FBI, J. Chris Warner, who we had a statement from him that identified information, he flagged and identified that there was credible information about organized criminal activity in Minnesota regarding staged accidents and fraud in the no-fault system. So I think, Mr. Chairman, as we look at the bill and those pieces in it, I think it is important. And I get Mr. Carlson got a little heartburn. I get a little heartburn because I think some of the sections of the bill this whole issue of accident solicitation. I just had a colleague come up to me whose daughter was in an accident on University Avenue a few short days ago with the stack of the envelopes coming in, hustling legal and medical work. And if you look at some of the ads and the promises that, you know, you're entitled to.
If you have a LATS envelope there, don't pull it up.
Well, Mr. Chairman.
I don't practice in that.
I know.
Mr. Chairman.
Nor do I market in that manner. For my practice.
I'm not going to read any of this except one. Well, I won't read that. But one of the ads, one of the solicitations, promises the consumer that you may be eligible for $40,000 from the no-fault system. And I can. Some of you may remember that Senator Gazelka was the chief author of a bill in 2012 that passed this Minnesota Senate unanimously. Representative Abler was the chief author in the House that passed the House unanimously that prohibited providers from saying that. So that's against the law to say that the individual. And why is it against the law? Because it's not true. It's misleading. It's fraudulent. So I think the point is we need to, in our opinion, so the bill as it has with the 90-day delay, Minnesota is not the only state delaying access to that information for hustling business. Texas has recently passed a law. North Dakota, just this 2013 session, passed a law that actually blocked that information, at least from going to those marketers that are targeting people at a time that they frankly shouldn't be targeted. So I think, Mr. Chairman, on balance and what's in the bill, again, in terms of the benefit increases, and as you know, we support the benefit increases in the package of a bill that deals substantively with issues like accident solicitation, some of the new tools, those reporting laws between insurers, prosecutors, and law enforcement, the modernization, as Mr. Choi commented. Our laws were passed 20-plus years ago before the whole kind of modern information. We've got to update the laws because criminals, medical providers, for instance, they get smart. So when we change laws, they get smart. They try to move around them. So they may perpetrate a small fraud against one insurance company knowing that the insurance companies really don't necessarily talk. So one provider doing scores of small frauds can go through the nets. So we have to have better communication and documentation to catch those fraudsters because they're felony fraudsters, but the way they're doing it, the system has a hard time picking it up. So, Mr. Chairman, I will stop at that again, commend you and the committee. I think that the package is important to pass. It's important to come back in 2014. There's issues that we have not addressed. The work group product is solid. I think it sets a framework and a matrix that we're committed to and hope that as this legislature this year and then comes back, we'll continue to focus on those issues because we have to deal with them. This is not getting better. It's getting worse in terms of the impact on consumers. So we need to work with each other, public, private, with you, prosecutors, law enforcement, to have a better shot at helping consumers in this state. So thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee members.
Okay, before Senator Goodwin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Johnson, I can't let you go without asking the question I normally ask of you when these kind of bills come up, and that is how much do you expect to lower premiums by with the huge amount of money that we're going to be saving the industry with this bill?
Mr. Chairman, no, Senator Goodwin, that's a fair question.
It is
a fair question.
And I
think for me and us, as Senator Jensen has described and Senator Gazelka and others, this is kind of some low-hanging fruit. And it is dependent on effective implementation. So it's kind of hard to answer the question, and it's got to get through the process, and we have to have it into law. But if we can cut in to, and the accident solicitation, I think, is a good issue. That's a doorway for the fraudsters. Now, that'll be my description. I believe that's a portal for the fraudsters. If we can narrow that doorway and the fraudsters have less of a shot,
are we doing
if those numbers are right, Senator Gooden, I can't give you a number. I think you know, but I believe that to whatever extent they're effectively implemented and we cut back on that growth of fraud, it's going to go to the benefit of consumers. As you know, we have a lot of moving parts there in terms of the cost of car repairs, and there's a multitude of issues that are coming together. But consumers will see the benefit of the reforms in their premiums, you know, depending on how effectively these are implemented.
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Johnson, it would be nice if sometime when these bills come through, we could have some kind of a guarantee in there that consumers will get some kind of a premium reduction of some sort, because that, as you well know, has not happened under any circumstances that we've done insurance legislation. The other thing is I hope at the very least that the industry stops charging people who just call and ask about claims, because they're raising premiums, getting rid of discounts, just when people call to talk to their agent and ask about a claim, whether or not the insurance company pays a penny towards it. So I'm hoping with all this that we're doing for the insurance company, and I do support this bill, that we get some action out of the insurers, too, that will stop doing that to consumers.
Mr. Chairman, if I can just one quick comment, and just to add to what I said, Senator Goodwin, is that, and I didn't bring it with me, but the state of Florida a year and a half or 2 years ago passed targeted insurance fraud reforms, and I actually will get you in the committee the article that just recently, some media coverage in Florida about the decreased rates auto insurance that Florida consumers are getting as a result, and the title of it, of the insurance fraud reforms that the Florida legislature passed. So at least I can give you a concrete reference of a state that had a similar focus, and it's a documented benefit to the consumers of that state paying car insurance premiums of some lower filings as a result.
Mr. Johnson, I think I have that article in my office. I was down in Florida, I don't know, a month or two ago. It doesn't matter, but I brought that home, where the rates have been lowered, the no-fault rates in Florida. So I think I have a copy of that. Senator Letts.
Mr. Chairman, I understand the concern about targeting inappropriate solicitation, but I think we also have to be mindful of businesses that should have a legitimate right to market to potential customers, and of consumers who are victims of accidents and have been injured. I have an opportunity to have access to a variety of information, knowledge about the providers available in the market that they can turn to for help in dealing with, which is often an adversarial system that is often stacked against individual victims of auto accidents. So sometimes, for example, the medical providers and the lawyers that represent them are the only people in the system. The lawyers that represent the injured parties are the only people in the system looking out for the injured people. And the insurance companies are doing everything they can to tamp down on claims, with lots of argument over what's legitimate and illegitimate about those claims. So I think we need to be careful about simply saying that solicitation is merely an avenue for fraudsters to enter the market. It's also an avenue for sharing of information to legitimate consumer interests and businesses to provide information for legitimate potential customers to find them.
Is that, Mr. Chairman?
Mr. Johnson.
I know it's a comment. Could I comment? I don't know if there was a question there. And not to argument at all, Senator Letts. I think we're not trying to deal or interfere with provider advertising, and actually provider advertising under the no-fault law, as you may remember, is governed by a specific statute. And it actually permits a whole series of, you know, outreach information. So, Senator Letts, we don't have a problem or concern, and we're not here to address that. So I think our no-fault law currently has pretty specific kind of parameters in general about provider advertising, and that's the law actually that Senator Gazelka, chief author, and the healthcare providers supported in 2012. So my comments were specifically off of that narrower group of people whose names are on accident reports. And it's not intended, because there's obviously a lot of people not on there who we all receive information kind of regularly. And so we're not talking about billboards and general mailings and, you know what I mean? So there's a lot of other advertising that goes on. We just think that the accident solicitation is an inappropriate time. Right after that, let the individual make their decision on their health care provider and not have cards coming in that say you may be entitled to $40,000, which, frankly, is not true. I mean, as an example, where I think it's got a deceiving or an untruthful element to it.
Mr. Chairman?
Let's
say the card had provided only lawful and accurate information. Would it then have been problematic?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Letts, I think I get these in my mailbox at home, and it's not targeted to me. I don't have any problem with that. Somebody goes through our neighborhood, and I get a little 8.5 by 11. It's a provider advertising. I don't have any objections to that.
No, but Mr. Chairman, what if you got in an auto accident and you received a letter directed to Mr. Johnson that says if you need certain kind of services now in connection with the fact that you've been may have been injured, you can contact this provider. If you've got a lawn care company that drives through a neighborhood and sees that you haven't mowed your lawn in 3 weeks, and they leave a note, "Dear Mr. Johnson, we can mow your lawn for you if you hire us." It's accurate information, not misleading in any way, making directly available to you in a time of your need the information related to a provider that can address those needs. I fail to see where that – I can see how it could be abused with misleading information, but that's a different question. How's that problematic?
Well, Mr. Chairman, Senator Letts, I think we may just disagree on that. I just think that's the wrong targeted list of marketing. I just think it's and it's not just me. I would encourage you to ask some provider groups what they think about soliciting in that way to that narrow group of individuals at that time after an accident. I think it's the wrong time to bond, and it's a bombarding of people with the solicitations. We're not talking about one or two. We're talking about stacks coming, both law firms and providers who market that way.
Well, maybe the Attorney General should look at some of those envelopes you get that are solicitation you get that are promising things that should not be promised.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
A couple of hints on that, maybe get a little wake-up call, too, and that might help that a little bit. Thank you very much. Kevin Goodnew, are you? I didn't see. Oh, there he is. Representative Goodnew, how are you today? Maybe we'll find out.
Mr. Chair, I'm wonderful today. Thank you very much for the opportunity to speak in front of you in the committee. Committee members, I'm here to speak with regard to the bill. When the bill was first introduced, I'm here on behalf of the Minnesota Chiropractors Association, and we've been involved over the years in working with the insurance industry and others in identifying those folks that are responsible for fraud, waste, and abuse in the system, and working with the insurers to try to identify those folks and take reasonable actions in order to address that. As Mr. Johnson mentioned before, Senator Gazelka was author of some legislation a couple of years ago that we worked with them on, worked with Senator Gazelka on and the insurers on, that did address issues related to advertising, with solicitation after the fact, basically your ambulance chasers, and that legislation was impacted and was enacted with our support. We have yet to see the results of all that because those laws have gone into effect and we'd like to see the actual impacts. We're hearing anecdotally that it has had a positive impact on the market out there and some of the other bad players out there in the market. I want to caution folks against overreacting to the sky is falling demagoguery that sometimes goes on from testifiers. We do have a good system in Minnesota. We have good providers in Minnesota. And our role as an association is to make sure in efforts to address the issues of fraud that we don't overreact to some of the concerns that are out there and actually put legitimate operators and good health insurers health providers out of business, and at the same time also restrict the ability of patients, people injured in an auto accident to access the needed health care that they need. So anyway, when the bill was introduced, we identified four sections within the bill that we had concerns with. Two of the sections with regard to the access to accident information, the amendment from our perspective addresses that, and I'll defer to Joe Carlson and his group with regard to the details of that. But just as long as that information is eventually allowed out there, we're good with that. Typically, our members do not use that information to solicit, to solicit business. I'm sure there are some. We also don't have billions of dollars to establish an identity on TV, a lizard or a female spokesperson. So, you know, when you look at things, you should maybe look at it relative to what else is being spent on advertising. And is that appropriate as well? I'm assuming that providers aren't the only ones that may be deceiving the public sometimes on what they're selling. And I won't go any further on that. The two areas, the issue on the prompt pay in Section 6, the amendment addressed our concerns about that as well, so we're okay with those two sections. The two sections, Sections 2 and Sections 3, Senator Latz has talked about one. One is the civil penalties related to giving those to the Department of Commerce. We were one of the groups that said we don't support that section. We think it should be deleted. There was movement, and we said, well, you know what, if the evidentiary standards were raised from preponderance of the evidence to something else, the conviction, we'd be okay with it. I know that creates other issues, but the amendment as it was introduced addresses that issue as far as the evidentiary standards. Two other issues we're still concerned about is this, the level of the fine. It doesn't make much sense that you should be able to fine small healthcare providers $25,000 per incident, but you're only able to fine insurers $10,000 per incident. So that the level of the fining, I think, is concerning, and so that's the other issue. The other thing, that we want to make clear that it is tied to a conviction, and right now it's implied, but it's implied, as was stated by the representative from the Department of Commerce. Section 3, now into Section 4 under the amended bill with regard to deauthorization. Again, we had concerns about that. Our suggestion was that we delete that section completely. We did say that we would be willing to work with the author to find a middle ground. This amendment does move to a middle ground with us on that. We want to make sure that the deauthorization under this section applies only to no fault, because that's the provision we're dealing with. It doesn't apply more broadly than that. Each payer group can decide who's their authorized provider group, and I think it needs to be clear that it applies to no fault. Again, I believe it's implied, but I don't think it's specifically stated. Also, the triggering acts within that section for deauthorization, in later part in the bill, it refers back to unlawful acts, but it's unclear that the triggering acts are actually unlawful, and we want to make sure that it's clear that those triggering acts are actually against the law and not an inadvertent error or the activity of somebody exercising their rights. And so that's the other thing we want to guard against. That's it. Oh, and the other issue was that was addressed in the amendment that we appreciated was that the power for that disciplinary action should rest with the licensing boards, the disciplinary boards that are out there. If the disciplinary boards or the licensing boards actually want that power, I'll leave that up to them to tell you. But we would prefer going through them rather than the Department of Commerce. So that concern was actually addressed in the amendment as well. So
that's my... Just say that I don't think this committee and the working group are overreacting. I think we understand that 97.5% of the providers out there are doing a good job, and they don't fall into the category of it's the bad people we're after. So
yeah, Mr. Chairman. And members of the committee, I want to say that for the record, I agree with you. Yeah. I don't think you're overreacting. I appreciate your approach.
I don't know what you say. It sounded like that was kind of your talking there.
It's always a challenge when I follow Mr. Johnson.
All right. That's a good
certainly, my comments were certainly right today.
Who's your sidekick there? We haven't seen this guy for about 3 days.
Yeah, there we go. I'm an actual provider. Hi.
I'm a provider. Go ahead. A little shorter this day. Okay.
Oh.
No, okay. Go ahead.
I'm Dr. Wells. I'm a practicing chiropractor. I've been practicing for 14 years. And if you look, I'm the only one listed that participated. So if you have provider questions, please, I encourage you to ask. I am here to answer questions. I've met with a few chiropractors. We did have some concerns, more specifically about the section dealing with batch billing. It was my understanding I participated in almost every session that happened in the work group. The understanding was that batch billing is an issue and it needs to be taken care of, and I agree with that. I think 180 days is probably too long. But here's my concern. The way it's written right now, it has a bunch of replication obligor and identification, da-da-da, but it never mentions getting a claim number and making sure everything is set up before that time starts ticking. I think it's very important that that be established so that way we avoid problems. And I'll give you an example. A college student gets into an accident at her college inside somebody else's car. Now, at that point, if she's injured, she has to go under her parents' policy. Well, dad gets a call and says, hey, you know, I need the insurance card because I got hurt. And the first thing dad says is, well, I don't want my insurance rates to go up. I'm not going to give you my card. Okay? This can take months to resolve. So if we have something in there that says it establishes, we need a claim number, we need these things to happen before that time starts to tick, that 60 days, which I'm agreeable to, I think that that's probably a more fair way to go down the road. No questions? Okay.
Oh, you're good.
Okay.
You're done.
So, I'm done. So the next, I only have two more things. Regarding the solicitation, I was one of the ones who pushed it really hard. And what's been talked about mainly is, oh, how mailers are used or how we get stacks of letters. But what's not talked about is what the true fraud that's being committed. The true fraud that's being committed is there are people who go down, get the police reports, and still knock on doors. Is it against the law? Yes, it's against the law, but nobody reports it. Those are the ones I'm more concerned with, as opposed to whether or not you get a stack of letters that you can throw away on your own. Now, from a personal perspective, yes, I think it's an invasion of my privacy. If my name is out there and I've been in an accident and I get a stack of letters, I don't think it's right. But let's keep the eye on the ball. It's about fraud. Okay, the fraud is being committed by the renters who get the police reports, identify minority community members, and they knock on their door and they solicit them. That's the issue. It's not the stack of letters.
A lot of this, you're hitting at it, is the enforcement end of it. And I guess it's not glamorous.
No.
It's kind of stuff to get out for the enforcement people to do, but have about a dozen stings and then maybe we'll get people's attention.
I would have to agree with you. But in my it's a personal issue, and nobody's talked about it. It's the 72A.327, the health care claims rights of appeal. Now, I know it's been put out that it's confusing, it's repeating the arbitration process, et cetera, but I want to remind you that the difference is that I have the right to appeal on medical necessity basis, and then I have the right to be judged by healthcare providers, not three attorneys sitting in a room deciding what needs to be done. So it's my understanding that we're going to continue on and try to make more reforms. So what I say is leave this in for a while until we can get a level playing ground established so not so many cases end up in arbitration and maybe some guidelines get established, and then we could take this up. Because this protects me as a provider, but it also protects my patient, because then I can say, well, they said it wasn't medically necessary. Why don't I go get judged by healthcare providers instead of attorneys? That's all I've got to say on that.
Do you want to go away? Okay, thank you very much. I think Joel Carlson might be the...
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee.
Witness. Thank you, guys. Gil.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. Appreciating everyone's comments. I just want to have members turn to R1R, the repealer, and get at this issue of 72A.327. If you look at the second word in that statute, which, by the way, was adopted in 1989, has never been once used or implemented by the Department of Commerce. It says that an insured has that right to bring this alternative review to the Department of Commerce, which no insured has ever done. And that's the point that we're trying to get at. It's the insured, the consumer, that would have that right. It's not a provider's right to go and get optional treatment for me. So I don't want the committee to be misled. We're only talking about the insured's right to do that. And the insured has never done it. The Department of Commerce has never adopted rules for it. They've never had a hearing. And we think that just removing that section collectively is better and just handle everything through the no-fault arbitration system. So we're only talking about the insured. And I appreciate everything Dr. Wells says, but that's what we're talking about, an insured. It's the second word. That's what we're talking about.
Dr. Wells, did you have a...
Yes, I do. Okay.
Comment.
If a provider gets an appropriate assignment of benefits, I step into the shoes of the insured. This is the only time when it would be allowed. So it is true. It is only the insured who has the ability to do this. But if I get an appropriate assignment of benefits, that means I am stepping into the insured's shoes. I have been given permission by my patients to deal with this issue. So it may say insured, but with the assignment of benefits, I have that right to step into it. Now, the question hasn't been asked yet. Why do we want to repeal this when it basically, if you read it, it's not a bad statute. Could it be refined a little bit? Yes, but I think we can do that with the subcommittee. So I'm just asking that you leave it now. And is there any questions? You just came in the room. Did you have any questions for the provider?
He didn't hear your comment.
He didn't, did he?
How could he?
He left at the wrong time. So I ask that we leave it in. It's not going to hurt to leave it in. And by the way, I tried to use this. 2010, I wrote a letter to the Commerce Commissioner saying, I would like to use this. I have the appropriate assignment. I'm ready to do it. And I got crickets for an answer. I know that Dr. Dahl from SUMA MRI has used the assignment and benefits to step in the insured's shoes and said he's wanted to do this. Now it's approaching 50 times. And each time, there has not been a response from the Commerce Commission, or he gets a response that says we are not set up to do this. And that's it. So you can't say it hasn't been tried, because it has. It's just nobody wants to set up the rules to do it. That's it.
Let me acknowledge a couple of folks in the audience. Probably the last time this stuff was really hard looked at was Senator Jack Davies, a good friend of mine, and Senator Bob Tennyson. And I think they were leaders in these areas years ago. But Mr. Davies has said to me, you know, Jim, I don't think we've looked at this stuff forever. And he said he's kind of, I think you said that publicly at one of our meetings, that it's about time to look at this area. So you want to talk, Mr. Davies? I think you do, yeah. That's fine.
Mr. Chair?
Yeah.
While he's coming to the table, I just want to know if it looks to me like in the bill there's significantly increased in maybe not responsibilities for the Department of Commerce, so I'm wondering if there's a fiscal note on this as far as the additional duties for Commerce.
You know, let me make my statement that I make about three times a year. This is the second or third time this year. You know, it just seems to me every time we ask a department to do something, we need 4.5 FTEs or what the hell ever they're called, or 7 more people, and maybe the department has 1,400 people. I don't know. And I'm sure they're all very busy, but I just say eat it and do it. Now, if it's an admin or whatever department it is, transportation, I don't care what it is, we need 7.5 more people. Well, and I know they're all busy people and they're my friends, and I helped them get a little raise here the other day, by the way. But I think they could handle some of this stuff. That's my opinion. Semester Davies.
Mr. Chair, would you come with me to the next committee meeting on my little workforce bill that...
You're darn right I will.
...bill that only,
yes.
only takes 3 months and they want a fiscal note on it?
Yeah, I'm very serious about this. It gets a little old. I've been hearing this for years, and I usually make this speech, I said it earlier, about 5 times a year, that we give you an assignment, you know, do it. Just do it. All right, it's Mr. Davies.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Jack Davies. I was in the Senate a long time ago and was the daddy of no-fault auto insurance. And I've been sitting there listening and wondering to myself, why in the world is this fraud problem a problem of no-fault auto insurance? And I finally figured it out, and I wanted to pass that on to the committee. The no-fault system is an efficient, neat way for getting the money from the insurance company to the injured person. The alternative systems to getting the insurance money to the injured victim is very inefficient. So the fraudsters have moved in to the efficient system. So that's my defense of no-fault auto insurance.
All right. Well, you were here already, but go ahead. You can come up again. We don't cut anybody off here.
Thank you. Chairman. On behalf of the 330 employees of the Department of Commerce, we...
I added 1,000 to make just make it a... We usually add 500 or 1,000 when I give that speech, but go ahead.
Thank you. We have not received a fiscal note on this. However, we
you're
do...
You're not
gonna. We do anticipate a fiscal impact, not just for employees, but also for the infrastructure to retain and collect the information that we would be required to under the statute relating to provider information that we currently don't house at the Department of Commerce. Thanks.
We just got all of the book. They'll have a lot of stuff to do.
All right. Are we done? Senator Brown.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is for Senator Jensen. I'm looking at the participating members list for the fraud working group.
Yes.
I don't see anybody on here who represents the auto glass industry. Is there a reason for that?
Mr. Chair?
No.
Senator Brown?
Are we trying to help with
that? Well, I guess my comment would be, can we rectify that?
Absolutely. And with the standing subcommittee, when we make the subgroups and get those going, we can get more people involved because we would be able to target that specific issue. And what happened in the way that we handled this to create this bigger matrix, we had so many people that came forward and gave us suggestions. That's why it's so important that we pass this and get a subcommittee set up so we can continue the work that we need to do. And within those subgroups going forward, we would be able to invite who we believe needs to be at the table for that particular issue.
Senator Brown, I think that the amendment helped, but I'll have Mr. Kasota. Senator Kasota.
I just think they're an important player
in
this, and
they should be at the table too. Yeah. And Senator, Mr. Chair, Senator Brown, when we were looking at this, we were looking at it from a standpoint of no-fault arbitration, specifically, is it working? How does it work? What was it intended to do? So the original intent was to bring it back to what the original language meant to do, to make it a quick, effective, easy way for consumers and injured people to get that restitution or whatever through an arbitration process. It was meant to be very quick and not handle very large claims. So that's what we were looking at.
We've been visiting the last few days with the glass industry, and we're working closely with them. So. Okay, any further comments from the audience or any of the senators? Senator Latz?
Thank you. Could Senator Jensen respond to the concern raised about the level of the administrative penalty that's provided here, $25,000, as opposed to $10,000 in other portions of the Commerce Department's enforcement?
Sure, Mr. Chair. Senator Latz. This number was provided based on some other states that had utilized this kind of process when dealing with fraudulent activity. So the $25,000 was meant to be a signal that if you're going to do this, it's going to be a very high cost. So that's why the $25,000.
Mr. Chairman, I'm not specifically familiar with the other portions of the statute and with $10,000. Figure applies to, whether it's fraud or some other kind of infractions. But maybe the time has come to look at those portions of the statute and raise them to 25 rather than reducing this 25
yes.
down to 10. I think $10,000 just doesn't mean what it used to.
Right. Senator Letts, and we weren't looking at that when we looked in the working group, but I understand what you're talking about and probably something that we can take up in the subcommittee.
And then,
Senator Letts.
Mr. Chairman, I wonder if Senator Jensen would be open to the issue that was raised by the Commerce Department that I was inquiring about earlier. I appreciate the responses, so I have better information now relating to Section 2 of the bill, whether perhaps changing the burden, the administrative burden, to clear and convincing evidence rather than preponderance of the evidence would be considered a welcome way to perhaps split the middle here on this one rather than reverting completely to a conviction-based enforcement as well.
Mr. Chair, yes, Senator Letts, I would be reluctant to do that at this time because of the amount of work and effort that went into this with every single work, every aspect that we could think of to come in and allow them in to give to voice and to share. And the goal of the working group was to create legislation. So we could do this if we wanted to. I'd like to maintain the spirit of what we did within that working group so that the subcommittee can continue its work and continue with everyone's involvement to tackle some of these issues that haven't been able to be resolved for a number of years. So at this time, I would like to leave it the way that it is currently in the amendment.
A lot of work, a lot of compromise in 4, 5, 6 months here, so that's not to say we can't tweak things, but I mean, there has been a great deal of effort, bipartisan effort, and everybody that I can think of was at the table, you know. So, all right, any further remarks? I think we're ready for, I believe it has to go to what committee does it go to next?
Judiciary.
Oh, no.
Mr. Chair, public safety. Mr. Chair, public safety is next.
Oh, that's the only one. That's our abortion, right? No. I'm just
I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman. I did have one follow-up question.
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't see that. Okay. Senator Letts.
I wasn't just raising my hand because apparently my committee has requested to see it.
Although yes, absolutely.
We try to focus our committee on the sections of the bill that are most directly
and I understand
the jurisdiction
that. I was trying
of the Judiciary
to be,
Committee.
Yeah.
Just to make sure I understand this clearly, in that deauthorization provision that prohibits solicitation. I understand that's with regard to no fault only, but is that an outright ban on, if I'm reading this correctly, say direct mailing to injured persons mentioned in accident reports from
the district
medical providers, or is it simply a delay? I heard some conversation earlier like the information won't be released for 60 days or 90 days. And if that's the case, after the information is released, is direct mail solicitation authorized under this bill?
Mr. Chair and Senator Letts, this would just require a 90-day delay.
Okay. So the idea is don't hit them when they're most vulnerable. Give them a chance to sort of sort out what's going on, and then they can more readily accept and analyze the information that's being provided through
that's
solicitation
kind of
mail?
That's
right.
Correct.
Is that the theory?
Yes.
All right. Thank you for the clarification.
Quick,
and Mr. Chairman, I'm agnostic on whether judiciary sees it next or public safety sees it next. I don't care. If and when we get the bill, we'll do our best to have a hearing on it, although we all understand the accelerated timelines this session.
Yeah. I would ask the author what we're, I guess, let's go to a couple of committees, and the motion would suggest what committee you'd like to go to. So.
I move that we recommend this to pass and be moved to the Public Safety Committee.
As amended. Okay. Any further discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed. Motion prevails. When do we meet again?
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for all your effort and work on this. We meet next Monday at noon.
Yes.
Well, phew.